It's a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, has Justice Winslow turned a corner? We'll talk about the third year forward's impressive series.
And how can the Heat go into Philadelphia and extend their season? We'll talk about how they can win Game 5 and what they can do if Josh Richardson is sidelined Tuesday night. Thank you for listening, for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for The Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
On today's show, we're going to discuss how the Heat can win Game 5 and who might replace Josh Richardson in the starting lineup, but let's start with a game that we are creatively calling True or False.
That took a while to come up with. I mean, we were
racking our brains.
It's the end of the season, and our nerves are frayed, and we were wondering what we could possibly call this. We settled on True or False. Yeah. A classic, if you will.
The runner-up was False or True, but we settled on...
Changing things up, yeah.
Yeah, we settled on True or False. But let's start with this one. True or False, David, regardless of the outcome, Justice Winslow turned a corner in this series.
I'm going to say true. I think he's discovered that he plays better when there's a little emotionality involved, something that I've criticized him for in the past. I think when the playoffs have something at stake the way they do, I think he understands that his role needs to be a little bit more focused, that he needs to play a little bit more efficiently, and we've seen that. I mean, I understand that progress will be made over the course of a 7-game series when you play the same opponent and you start to see these trends develop from time to time. It's a much more intense version of what happens over the course of the regular season, but at the same time, I think we're starting to see improvement for him. I'm starting to see, me personally, him embracing that role. I know he talked about being the quote-unquote villain, but whether he's seen as a villain or not, I think he's just understanding that he needs to play with a little bit more fire, something, again, that I haven't seen from him over the first couple of years of his career. So to me, yeah, I think he has turned a corner. I think he understands that he can play a bigger role in helping this team win, and he's finally living up to some of the expectations a lot of people had for him as a lottery pick in 2015.
I think there's a symbolic importance, too, to him bleeding in that game 4 and having to get stitches at halftime. I really do think that there's a real, and I know that it's going around, there's pictures of it going around Heat Twitter and things like that, but I think there's a real significance to that for Justice Winslow. I mean, I don't think he's unaware of those other photos of Dwayne Wade having bleeding from the face during a game. Udonis Haslem bleeding from the face. I mean, I have a t-shirt with Udonis Haslem bleeding from his face. It's just screen printed on a black t-shirt. It is part of being a Heat lifer, and I think that mattered. And to see him, and just like the symbolicness of it, it just sort of caps off the amount of intensity and aggression that he came to this series with. There have been things going towards the end of the season. I pointed out on a number of times how he looked more explosive, leaping to the basket, going up for rebounds and doing things like that. And that's carried over into this first round. So having his three-pointer progressively get better, and then finding that tipping point in how he's able to not only, I think he used to be so much of in his own head that he didn't bring that emotion, right? He was trying to figure out, okay, you know, I get the pass, I got to set my feet up this way and shoot my three-pointers this way. And I think he was a little too cerebral. But he's now, I think, gotten so much more comfortable with that three-point shot. It looks way more natural. He's gotten his leaping ability back. He looks much more explosive. He's probably in the best shape since his injury from last season. And so now all those things are sort of coming back together, and they're coming easier and more natural. And he's able to then put more of that intensity and that emotion into the game. And I think that's really... Some guys don't play well with that, but he really seems to play well with that sort of aggression and that emotional edge that he's playing with. And I love it not only on defense, but offensively, that aggression that he's using to get to the rim and all those things. I think that's really going to help him. And I think he's not only found the best version of his game, but found like a really good rhythm and a way to approach the game. And I think that's that when I think of if he turned a corner, I think that's where he turned the corner. It's just a general approach to the game.
Yeah, that's fair. And look, obviously, a lot of this comes with the huge grain of salt that this needs to carry over into next season whenever that starts. He hasn't shown that fire over the course of the regular season very frequently. I can think of one other time where he did, and was the return of Dwayne Wade a couple of seasons ago as a member of the Chicago Bulls when he kind of got into it right before he got hurt last season. You know, he kind of played with that same edge when he realized that things were a little chippy, that he wanted to prove to Wade that he could hold his own, et cetera. And he certainly lived. I think he had one of his best games of that 19 game stretch before he got hurt. And so I think obviously this needs to carry over. Like, we're seeing a lot of people kind of take on that role of playoff versions of X player, mm-hmm. like Playoff P, you know, that's a ridiculous nickname for Paul George, but even Matthew Dellavedova in Milwaukee, like a good version of the player that he was over the course of the regular season. Maybe that's overstating things a little bit. I don't want Justice to fall into that same category. Yeah. So he just needs to find a balance between bringing that level of energy and emotion and aggression that he's feeling against the Philadelphia 76ers at some point during the regular season.
He had a great playoffs as a rookie too. So there is a possible scenario where it's just playoff Justice. And but you're right. You hope that carries over for the whole regular season, because you don't want him to just end up like a Matthew Dellavedova type of role player whose skill set works in the playoffs. You want that kind of player to be there in the regular season. It's a good point. And hopefully he has. And just again, we talked a lot about that, the attitude that he has right now. But you know, his three-pointer looks really good. Like, he looks like, whether or not it's going in or not, it looks more natural. He isn't hesitating as much on it. He seems much more comfortable. And that, again, going back to the last month or so of that regular season, we started to notice that as well. He seems to settle in on a free throw shooting form. A number of things look better for him. And that's the point I want to make here. It's not just these four games going on into five games that we've been impressed with Winslow. I've been really impressed with him for like the last month or so of the regular season. So I have a little bit more confidence there. Let's move on to our next one. True or false, the Heat will have a better chance to win game five if they can slow down the pace.
I think that's also true on my end. I believe that, you know, they're better suited, when things are slower, but they've been able to play at a high pace. But my concern is that in the fourth quarters, they seem to run out of gas, particularly in the defensive ends. Mm. And I think that might be not because they're lacking conditioning or anything like that, but they play with such emotion to help compensate for their lack of talent that by the time the fourth quarter rolls around, they may not have anything left. They've got just enough for a last-minute spurt. They've always been able to keep all three, but they managed to keep things close for the most part. You know, there were a couple blowouts mixed in there. But again, that emotion has helped kind of carry them and buoy them for most of the series. And then they wind up just not having enough to close out games. And to me, I think maybe if they just kind of play at a much more comfortable pace, it's kind of it's a fine line for them, right? Because they have to play, like we were just talking about Justice, he's perfectly symbolic of what this team needs. He needs to play with that energy, but at the same time, if he doesn't have that energy, maybe he's less effective, but then he might also be burning out if he plays at a high level throughout in the first three quarters. Yeah. So it's difficult. It's difficult. I mean, I think Spoelstra might have to balance those lineups a little bit more effectively.
The in vogue term in this series has been selectively running, right? From the Miami Heat's perspective, I keep hearing selectively running. So they don't want to play at a high pace all the time, but when they get it, when, you know, the right guy gets a defensive rebound, say like a Goran Dragic or a Justice Winslow or somebody who can push the ball down the court, then they selectively run. Like, if you're the Heat, if you're a teammate and you see, oh, Winslow's got the board here, that means we're going to get out and run. But if you notice that Whiteside's the one.
I don't know about that.
Well, that's what they – you don't feel like
they're doing that? Is that what they're saying about that? Because I was watching game four, and Eric Spoelstra looks like he's going to tear his rotator cuff the way he keeps waving his players forward whenever they pull down a defensive rebound. It's like he's always push the plays, push it up floor, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just like – I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily more effective. At some point, I feel like the players are going to tune it out. It's like, do they want to play fast or not? And I'm personally confused, and I don't know that any beat reporters have necessarily asked him about why he wants to push the pace.
The beat reporters keep saying, or everybody that the analysis keeps saying, the Heat are better in a slower paced game. But I'm with you. They have not shown necessarily that they are they haven't shown that they're trying to slow the pace down. Like, offensively, I think they're trying to push the pace because, and I get it, like, from Spoelstra's perspective, offensively, they've got to get down the floor, get into their offense because Philadelphia's half-court offense is that good. And that, to me, that makes sense. Trying to get, but defensively, trying to, that's where people talk about pace on offense, but defensively, you can really control the pace. And that's where Miami's defense in transition and in the half court really comes in, not allowing them to get that three-pointer off within the first 10 seconds or the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. And they've had a hard time doing that, especially, like you said, in the fourth quarter, where it seems like Marco Bellinelli and J.J. Redick are just launching threes within the first 2 seconds of the shot clock. And a lot of that is due to Ben Simmons' drive and kick ability and his own creating ability. So you've got to be able to control him down. And just to go back to the original question, I think that's also true. I think the Heat will have a better chance if they could slow the pace down. But I want to focus on the defensive end of the court, not necessarily offensively, because, again, I think they have to get a lot of points in transition to score with the Sixers, but just not allowing – like, the Sixers can't take every shot within the first 7 seconds if the Heat are taking every shot within, you know, 20 seconds, you know, because they're just never going to win that – they're never going to win that way. They've got to be able to kind of get the Sixers to take more time off the shot clock. A big part of that's going to be Josh Richardson, whether or not he could play and whether or not he can guard Ben Simmons. He might miss game 5 with an injury that he sustained in game 4. We'll talk about if the Heat can replace him after this quick break. The playoffs are here, and just like the Miami Heat, it's time to step up your game. If you run a company and you're unhappy with the results from traditional advertising online or in print, make a big-time adjustment by advertising with us here on Locked On Heat. We've already got national brands advertising on the show, but it's also a great opportunity for South Florida businesses to connect with local Heat fans. You've heard about the studies already, how podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers, and how the number of people listening to podcasts continue to grow every year, heck, every month. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us here at Locked On Heat. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable, and they're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and your money. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. That's lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. Back with Locked On Heat, we'll talk about if the Heat can win game 5 later on, but we have to get to this news that Josh Richardson is questionable with a shoulder injury that he sustained during the first half of game 4. It's going to be a tough loss if he can't go, David. A lot of things to talk about here. So who do you think starts in his place? Let's start there.
Well, are we assuming that Tyler Johnson is going to be back in the starting lineup? We haven't heard anything at this point, right, that he's going to be out for game 5.
I think he's still planning to play his 12 minutes a game with his jacked up hand.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate because that would make things more easy for Spoelstra, you know, and having to decide who starts and who doesn't. To be honest with you, given Spoelstra's patterns in the past, I would expect that he would start Rodney Magruder. And I don't think that's the right choice, but I think he'll go with Magruder off the bench, somebody he feels comfortable providing defense right away and keeping Justice on the bench so that he can provide the offense that we've seen from him over the last few games. Look, again, in Spoelstra's view, and rightfully so, it doesn't really matter who starts so much as it's who plays the majority of the minutes. So while Magruder will probably start just to go in there, play quality defense, make things difficult for Šarić or whomever he's guarding, I guess, he would be probably on Šarić the same way Josh Richardson was. That might be a bad matchup for Miami.
Or to start?
But,
I mean, Richardson starts on Ben Simmons.
Not last game he didn't.
Did he not?
Actually, not the last two games. No, I think last game it was Johnson right away, which to me makes a hell of a lot more sense. Like, I don't know why the game starts off with Richardson trying to, you know, stay on Simmons and then switching it to Johnson at some point.
But either way, Magruder, he can't guard Simmons or Šarić, I don't think. I would agree with you. I think it would be Magruder if this were the regular season. Like, it would definitely be Magruder. I think Magruder has a chance to end up being the starter. But I do think Miami's going to need a little bit more size, and given that it's the playoffs and it's an elimination game, I get the feeling that he's going to go with Justice Winslow as a starter, especially considering how well Winslow has played, and just because he's going to need that size, I think he's going to go with Winslow as the starter there. But again, like, we talked about this in our mailbag.
I think Richardson's going to start, though. I think Richardson.
Okay, so I think he's going to play too. I'm with you. I think Richardson ends up playing the game. But if he doesn't play, I think Winslow gets the start. But that's interesting that you think Richardson's going to play, because I agree. You think, because he's listed as questionable, but
I think you'd have to like dislocate that arm, or you know, even if it's like dragging completely, I think he'll go out there for a game five. Like you've got, honestly, you've got 2 months to recover from this, you know? So I know that kind of sucks. You have to hope that you win game five in the hope that there's a game six. And maybe you're thinking ahead to say, look, if I sit out Tuesday night and we're going to win, then I can come back and play in game six in Miami. I mean, that's really optimistic, but I don't know that you can afford to take that chance. And
luckily,
to me, I feel like Richardson's makeup, I think he'll play regardless.
Luckily, he already signed that extension too. It's not an Isaiah Thomas situation. But, you know, when he came back after having that, he went to the locker room to deal with the shoulder injury. It was his left shoulder, and he came back and he was just dragging that left arm. I mean, he wasn't, and he had like 3 steals after he came back.
He did.
But it was all with his like right. It was all with his right arm. It was all with the right hand mostly.
No, actually, there was one time I think. Yeah, like he poked it free of Šarić at some point with that left hand. I don't even know how he extended it out that far, considering he was hurt. Somebody was driving on him and he poked it.
But there were times where he was just, that left arm was just limp on it at his side, especially on offense. And so I think that's actually where it's going to affect him more, is offensively and defensively. But for the Heat, they need him more defensively than offensively. You hope you can get some contributions from other guys. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I'm with you. I think he's going to play. But we're recording this on Monday, right? And he's listed as questionable as of Monday. By Tuesday morning, that might change to some, that, you know, it could change to probable. Who knows? But if he doesn't play, it's going to be a big blow to Miami, because he's just been that good. He's been that good in this series. I mean, his ability to switch from Šarić to Simmons, he's able to pick up basically anybody other than Joel Embiid. And I just don't know, given how many guys that the Sixers have that are like that, it's not enough to just have James Johnson and Justice Winslow. Against most teams, that would be enough. But against Philadelphia, you need all your long, switchy defenders as you can get, because they're going to push the ball in transition, and you're going to get cross-matched. And Josh Richardson needs to be able to not only pick up Simmons or Šarić, but be able to pick up basically anybody else in the court. And guys like Richardson, Winslow, and James Johnson are able to do that. So if he can't play, how do you think that impacts Miami's chances? Do they have zero chance if he can't go?
No, I mean, I think either Rodney or Winslow could do a good job of trying to keep them in there. I mean, it's all going to depend on, as it unfortunately always does, on somebody else picking up the slack offensively. We need a big game from Goran. We need a big game from James Johnson, one he's capable of, and we haven't seen from him so far in the series. I mean, he's been effective for the most part. He's shot well, particularly, I think, in was it game one and two. But, you know, we need to have something in the 20-plus range as far as scoring is concerned. And maybe even that comes from Hassan, something that we're not quite, you know, we're not expecting at this point. But he played mostly effectively against Joel Embiid, and I think we can expect him to continue to show some optimal effort. And hopefully he has a big game against Philadelphia.
And you don't think Richardson can get that 20 points per game?
I don't, not if he's hurt. No, and offensively, yeah, he seems too limited. Yeah. Like, I mean, that scoop shot that he lays in with the left hand, it's going to be a lot harder to put that up when you're dragging that arm across the court.
I don't think he's gotten one of those scoop shots to go. He tried one in game four. It didn't go. He's had a hard time getting that. And it's just, Philadelphia is so long and they pack the paint so well. They do a good job of doing that. Look, you brought up the Tyler Johnson thing earlier, and we're focusing in on this Josh Richardson situation right now. Whether or not he could play or not, it's going to determine a lot of what happens with Spoelstra's starting lineup. But Tyler Johnson hasn't played well, and he has been fiddling around with that bandage on his hand. He did that in the entire game four. He's just not effective in this game. I think the Sixers, their size bothers him. He's just having a hard time finding his offense. In addition to maybe having to find a replacement for Richardson, I wouldn't be surprised if Spo tried to find a replacement for Tyler Johnson in that starting unit. Again, it's an elimination game. If it's time for radical change, it's now. And if Richardson can go, I still think you move Richardson to the two, going back to a mailbag question we got on Monday, and play Winslow at the three. But they've got to figure something out, and I think they need to maybe shorten this rotation and try to find an answer that way, because Tyler's just not – he had those – It's such a shame that he hurt his hand, because it seemed like he was finally getting going with that catch and shoot game. And it's just, that was a killer. I mean, that really was a killer for the series. I think that Tyler Johnson,
it's, we needed him to be a plus out there on the floor, especially offensively. And he wasn't able to do that post injury. And that's, you know, that's, there certainly hurts Miami's chances when they need everybody to play at an optimal level. I wonder if Spoelstra goes with the emotional edge there, maybe starts Dwayne Wade.
Everything's on the table. It's an elimination game. We'll talk about how the Heat can win Game 5 in Philadelphia when we come back after this break. Before we move on with the show, we want to take a quick break and tell you about our Patreon page. You can find it by going to patreon.com/lockedonheat. And we are humbly asking for people to commit to a monthly pledge to help us continue to improve the quality of the show. Thanks to you who have already supported the podcast, we have quickly reached our initial funding goal that allowed us to purchase software that improved the quality of the podcast. But we aren't just stopping there. We've added a new tier of supporters. For $5 a month, you'll get access to a bunch of goodies, including salary cap and depth chart projections, free agency player rankings by position, a running list of our favorite trade ideas, and whatever else we can think of. Just go to patreon.com/lockedonheat to get started. Again, that's patreon.com/lockedonheat. That's patreon.com/lockedonheat. Back with Locked On Heat, David, what do the Heat have to do to win Game 5? That's the big question here, right? Down 3-1 in Philadelphia. Obviously, the Heat have got to make shots. I think we can start there, right? But you kind of alluded to this earlier. Spoelstra's got to find the hot hand.
But even, you know, we've seen moments where players have stepped up. And I think with the exception of Dwayne Wade, he hasn't done enough to free up those other players that have the quote-unquote hot hand. You know, it was Justice at one point, and then he kind of tailored away from him in the second half. You know, same thing with Goran Dragic when he took him out when he was playing at such a high level in Game 3. I think Wade is the only player on that roster who can say, you know what, I'm feeling it, I'm going to do what I want to, and Spoelstra has no choice but to allow him to do so. And that's not necessarily a knock, but I think he's earned that kind of responsibility and trust from Spoelstra. But, you know, from Spoelstra's perspective, if somebody gets going early on in the game, be it Tyler if he starts, or Goran or whoever, or Hassan, then create opportunities for that player and keep going to them. You know, go to the well as often as possible, because somebody's going to get into foul trouble in Philadelphia's end, or you're going to get the most out of those players while they're feeling it. And I think that's important. It's crucial for Miami in order to be able to build a lead, because we know that Philadelphia has the ability to come back. And so you have to be able to establish a lead early as big as possible in order to create a little bit of cushion there.
Not blow it in the last 79 seconds of the third quarter. You know, it's been a really tough challenge for Spoelstra to not only deal with all the things that a coach has to deal with in the middle of the game, but also determine, okay, who's my guy right now? I think that's why he keeps turning to Dwayne Wade. And there's a lot of people on Heat Twitter and just wherever where they're complaining, like, you can't just ride Dwayne Wade. And it's just, well, what option does Spoelstra have right now? Because he trusts Dwayne Wade in these situations. It's not like he could say, okay, Goran, take 3 or 4 possessions, we'll figure out if you got it. All right, if you don't, Wayne Ellington, take 3 or 4 possessions, we'll see if you got it. All right, if you don't, Kelly Olynyk, same thing. You can't go down the list, because if you keep doing that, the game's over and you haven't found your hot hand. And that's why I think he goes to Wade so often. So I get it, and I'm okay with it. And even in this last game, Wade missed a couple of shots down the stretch. He made a bunch of shots. He had a great fourth quarter. I think he had 12 points in the fourth quarter of Game 4, but he missed a bunch of shots too. I was okay with it, even if they were long mid-range shots, because they were somewhat open and they were relatively quickly in the shot clock, and that's just as good as a shot you're going to get against the Sixers defense that ranked better than Miami's defense all season long. And I think we have a lot of Heat fans have a tendency to forget that. The other thing that I think the Heat have to do is compete on the boards. They haven't out-rebounded the Sixers in a single game this series, but the one game they won in Game 2, they were within a series best 3 total rebounds of the Sixers, right? Otherwise, they have basically gotten blown out on the boards. But when they kept it close, and I think it was the Heat finished with 46 rebounds and the Sixers finished with 49. They have been able – they won that game, and it's been played more towards their pace. They won Game 2 113-103, which was one of the lower scoring games of the series. Surprisingly enough, that's still pretty high scoring. But it's not guys like Whiteside or Bam that are getting the rebounds. It's when the guards attack the glass, the perimeter guys. Josh Richardson had 5 rebounds in that game. Dragic had 4. Dwayne Wade had 7. James Johnson has to spend a lot of time on the perimeter just due to matchups. He had 7 rebounds.
Any guesses who the leading rebounder is for the Heat?
The series?
Yes.
Dwayne Wade?
No, it's not. It's Justice Winslow. It's 6.5 rebounds per game.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's Hassan is second at 6.3 tied with James Johnson. So.
When those guards are crashing the glass, it helps Miami get out into transition. They're able to keep up a little bit more offensively, and obviously defensively they're ending possessions. Philadelphia isn't getting those offensive rebounds, which they've done a really good job of, especially since Yurtsson Ilyasova is dominating the offensive glass. Joel Embiid does a typically good job of that as well. So I think I've been on here on this podcast 100 times saying that rebounds is a loser stat, but in this series, it's,
well, yeah, because it you know every time they pull down a rebound, that leads to an incredibly quick, fast break from Ben Simmons. You know, we've seen those outlet passes kill Miami on at least three occasions that I can think of. That's led to, I think, you know, quick scores from Dario Saric or others. JJ Redick, I think, broke free with one like that too. I mean, it just keeps piling on like that. So Miami has to be able to do what they can. That's again feeding into what we were talking about earlier as far as controlling the pace a little bit. You pull down that rebound, you do what you can to slow things down and keep Philadelphia from getting into their comfort zone of speeding things up and creating quick offense for them and limiting that score.
I really hope this isn't the last game of the season, David. Down 3-1 in Philadelphia against a more talented team that we've already admitted is just better. But this is going to be intense. I'm already nervous. But that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of Game 5. We're going to try to do a live recap using Facebook Live after tonight's game. We'll see if it works. We kind of did a test drive last week. We'll see if we can do it this time. Not making any promises, but check in with our Twitter account or our Facebook page at facebook.com/lockedonheat to find more information on that. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments to our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat and support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.